Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. 2021 is just about to fly away into cosmic never, never land. And we are now about to enter Catch 22 Skidoo. I start today's cusp of an ascending third millennial new year by looting KMUN's radio vault back to its early days of the mid-1980s, the final broadcast of Words, Words, Words by Dire Day, also known as the late Larry Burroughs, who died in 2014. The program ran weekly for 119 weeks from 1986 to 1988, every Thursday evening. What Dire Day had to say then seems a perfect preface to this oncoming pie-in-the-face 22-2, the third plague year of the 21st century. Dire Day's Last Words by Larry Burroughs. Lately, I have had a sense of things closing in and closing out. That is to say, the times, once again, are a-changing. Trouble is, I have lived just long enough to have accumulated experiential confirmation of the old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I have a sense that a nation is waking out of a bad dream, only to discover the house is on fire. And some wistful slouching movements in other directions are beginning to manifest. Nothing that a few covert monkey wrenches can't fix, though. Of the demons that have been eating us for years, centuries even, millennia for that matter, we've been backing into our future so long now. If we were to turn around and face it, I reckon we would just start walking back into the past. Oh well, Jeremiah never stopped Jerusalem from getting itself destroyed. Be that as it may, I would like to make some observations. I have felt a deep compulsion, like the ancient mariner, to grab a hold of the wedding guest and say, there was a ship. Now, the mariner only managed to stop one of three, but he did get his story out, and I reckon one of three, to be a pretty good average. Poetry does not record why the other two didn't stop, but I can venture a fair guess. There was a party going on, after all. When the mariner said, there was a ship, one of the guests probably said, I doubt it, and the other probably said, yeah, but so what? They both went on to the party. The third stayed to listen. Like I say, a pretty good average. There's a pretty good metaphor, too. But after all, it does come out of the 18th century and is somewhat outdated. I have in mind another idea. It is as if I was walking through the killing fields with Dame Homo sapiens, and in her one basket, she is carrying all of our eggs and most of everybody else's. And I see with my mystical eyes this high-powered bullet on a trajectory due to intersect with her head. And I give a pull on her skirt, and I say, there is a bullet. And she looks down and says to me, lousy sakes, hon, why you always dwelling on the negative? Look around. Look at all the directions from which no bullets are coming. Why can't you look on the bright side? Well, I pause for a while and take that into serious account. After all, this is Dame Homo sapiens talking. But then I look again, and there certainly is a bullet traveling on said trajectory. And I look down into her basket, and I see that lots of those eggs are already cracked, and the yolks are dripping out of the bottom. And I pull on her skirt, and I say, there is a bullet, and your eggs are cracking too. And she yanks her skirt away and says, go away, child, you bother me. And then I realize there is more at work here than simple common sense. And so I take a look at her head with my mystical eyes, and I see that her brain's already been more than two-thirds eaten away by demons buzzing around inside her skull like little killer bees. And then I realize that when that bullet passes through her skull, there is better than an even chance that it won't do any damage to her brain at all. I find, however, that this insight gives me no comfort. So I think to myself, what shall I do now? And I remember what Martin Luther King said about if he knew the world was going to end tomorrow, he would still go ahead and plant a tree today. And I remember what Oliver Hazard Perry said, never give up the ship. And I remember what the famous poet said, so what if you can't beat them? Do you really, really want to join them? And that is why, over the life of my radio program, called Words, 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 I have paid increasing attention to the things that kill and degrade and endanger us all. I have visited our economic situation and pointed to the dangerous and increasing concentration of wealth, which in the past has often preceded economic collapse, and which usually goes hand in hand with a diminishing democracy. As of last year, the poorest 20% of our population received 4.6% of the national income, the lowest ever. I have taken a close look at the environment, considered the dangers coming at us from the greenhouse gases we are pumping into the atmosphere, from acid rain, deforestation, desertification, from the massive amounts of toxins we are letting loose into the biosphere. I have mentioned the incredible rate at which species are becoming extinct, a rate of extinction matched only twice before in the history of life on this planet, pointed out the connection of all these things to the unwise use of resources, unwise use of energy sources, particularly oil, coal, and nuclear power, unwise agricultural practices. As this pattern of unwisdom became clear 20 or 30 years ago, what has also become clear is that it was all so unnecessary. It was not a natural and inevitable result of the ascendancy of our species on this planet. Stopping it all did not mean stopping our progress toward increased well-being for an increasing number of people. Not at all. There were other routes, much more benign, waiting only for us to choose them. But we haven't. My concern is that we have missed, or have by now, all but missed, a window of opportunity. It is my perception that for every dilemma we have backed into, nature has reserved a solution for us, and that nature has also provided a leeway, a lag time, giving us every opportunity to resolve the dilemma so that we may endure and prosper. It is also my perception that nature will not suffer folly forever. For instance, nature has many ways to limit populations and to keep them healthy. Usually, these mechanisms take the form of either birth control or death control. Some bird populations, for example, when they get too crowded, lay fewer eggs in the nest. It's no decision on their part. It just happens. A mechanism trips in. It is said that after World War II, or 1B, whichever, there was an above-average increase in the ratio of boy to girl babies born in favor of boys. Other populations use a predator-prey relationship. Sometimes vulnerabilities develop because of degraded habitat. Sometimes the vulnerability is in the nerves, stemming from too much close proximity. Sometimes, in highly successful top-of-the-heap predator populations, those with nothing bigger to bring them down, sometimes something much smaller enters them. I think of the African leopard, particularly in an area of the where was it? The Serengeti? No matter. What matters is that over a vast area there nowadays, any one leopard can take a skin graft from any other leopard without the slightest sign of rejection. Something not normally seen in a population of mammals. Genetically, they are all virtually identical. What happened was that some time ago, a retrovirus swept the vast area, clear of leopards, all but perhaps one mating pair. That brings us to retroviruses and the human population. Or for all we really know right now, we might substitute for the word retroviruses the term the thing or things that make for the suppression of the immune system. But, as I was saying, that brings us to retroviruses. And for now, we will stick to that term for it. In the wealthier countries of the world, population growth is slowing dramatically. In some, there is already negative growth, that is, reduction, in countries that were arriving at prosperity. And where the population growth was slowing, but which have now been sliding back into poverty, the population is beginning to grow more rapidly again. And in countries that have always been poverty-stricken, population growth has never stopped its dramatic increase. The suggestion is that for human populations in general, in these times, the arrival at a certain widespread level of well-being is a mechanism that limits population. Now, I think of Africa, probably the most ravaged and disrupted, not to say raped, continent on the face of the earth. Throughout history, the wealth of Africa has been bled since early on to enrich other empires, other nations, other continents. Its civilizations have been repeatedly destroyed. The point is, had our ability, especially in the 20th century, to create wealth and well-being, had this ability taken the opportunities to do so in increasingly benign ways, and had that wealth been shared equitably among us, which, by the way, increases our ability benignly to create more wealth and well-being, the human population would have found a threshold, a holding capacity, at which the earth would have been able to sustain us well and indefinitely. But that didn't happen. We overran the mark because of our history of bad collective choices. And now, out of Africa, so we are told, I consider it yet unproven, but it does have a certain ironic value. Out of Africa comes more than one retrovirus. Whether it is true or not, it certainly seems that nature is saying, time is up. When I was first listening to assessments of the AIDS phenomenon, it occurred to me, hearing the reports, so many cases in the U.S. a number of years ago, so many cases last year, so many cases this year, it occurred to me that the number of cases was roughly following a doubling pattern, year to year. So, in the way I have of worst-case situations, to see how bad they might get, so as not to be surprised, I calculated how long it would take everyone in the United States to get infected if the pattern kept up. I found that sometime in the year 1999, everyone would have it. Now, that did not devastate me because I understood that such was not the nature of the disease. It did something to indicate the seriousness of the situation, though. That was some 4, perhaps 5 years ago. A few months ago, there was some renewed interest in the subject, and the number of carrier cases to date was mentioned. I went back and checked my calculations. The number of carrier cases to date exceeds the number indicated in those calculations. I fully expect the pattern will not continue. If it were to continue, the whole U.S. population would have it. We are assured this is unlikely, but I think there is a use for this type of thinking. It provides a perspective with which to gauge the known and the unknown. We don't know enough about this disease to be complacent or confident about it. There is renewed argument over the means by which it can or cannot be transmitted, for one thing. For another, viruses have extremely efficient methods by which they can transform themselves and thereby more effectively do what they do. They can be like keys which change themselves to conform to the lock on the next door through which they must pass. Can or will this virus do that? Who knows? Lastly, even if the whole population being infected is extremely unlikely, as I believe it is, surely the whole population will be affected. Where will it stop? 3 million? 6 million? 12? 24? 48? Or 96 million? At what point does the difference between 24 or 48 or 96 and 250 million begin to lose the distinction in the absolute horror of the reality? This speculation on the unknown gives us a perspective on the known, for it helps us to realize the overwhelming negligence of the official and public response thus far. This overwhelming negligence seems to be deep-seated in the human psyche. It is as if the unreported injustices we have visited one another, one-on-one, group-on-group, since time began, have never gone away, but have accumulated and now manifest themselves in our nuclear arsenals, in the rapidly degrading environment, and in the plague that is upon us. Day by day, we measure our overwhelming negligence on the composite yardstick of rampant militarism, government deficits, private and public corruption, heroin and cocaine consumption, religious shamanism, the parade of poverty and famine, apartheid, legless Central American children, the endless litany of our mea culpa woes. Perhaps the greatest woe of all is that the word of hope has already been spoken. Nothing new needs to be found to turn us from death toward life. Life abundant is inherent in the biosphere, or creation, if you will. Life abundant for all humans is inherent in the better side of our history up until now, especially in the better state of the history, in our increasing ability to provide for our own well-being. We as humans have only to choose it, one for all and all for one, and this we have not done. We have not. Perhaps we will not, but I refuse to believe that we cannot. And that was by Larry Burroughs. Akka, dire day. Dire day's last words. His final radio program on KMUN, 1988. And this is from a script that I read. This is my voice, not Dire Day's, that you have heard this morning. And now, something I put together. Resolutions for 2022. And it might sound familiar because they are also the resolutions for 2021. First on the list might be a resolution to re-educate yourself and critically examine the fundamentals and history of human rights. Resolve to refuse fables of racial and national supremacy might be the next resolution. Resolve to stand firm against a despotic attempt to reinstate a neo-despotic patriarchy. Resolve to refute current notions that the opposition does not have the right to exist. resolved to assist holding together a society threatened with dissolving into disorder and inequality by Yankee Doodle apartheid. Resolved that if chaos and disorder devolve upon society by bigoted cleansing campaigns, to retain democracy in the home and in the neighborhood and community. Resolved to not allow and to personally intercede when the essentials of democratic life are threatened. Remember, we have the absolute right to defend our rights. Resolve to understand implicitly that a majority begins with one and flows outward. Resolve to resist one party and or one religion rule in this overwhelmingly multicultural nation, which would destroy democracy more surely than the cancer of onerous economic inequality. Resolve to return the term populist to its rightful definition of the people, which has been tarnished and soiled by right-wing absolutists who wish to eradicate governance by the people, and simultaneously resolve to remove the elitist stigma of the term progressive. Resolve to defeat tyranny masked within democracy. Resolve to bear witness to local oppression. Resolve to not be bullied even by the most dangerous and spiteful. Resolve to personally stick up for the rights and persons of those prejudiced against. Resolve to resist the so-called security state that protects the ruling class by suppressing the rights of the people. Resolve to resist a registry of Muslims or any other religion, race, minority, or opposition. Resolve to show up at protests against the hijacking of democratic government. Write letters, send emails, tweet, and speak out whenever and wherever necessary. Resolve to donate and participate in progressive causes. Work in campaigns for local, state, and national progressive candidates. Resolve to keep your head and convictions when others might temporize their own. Resolve to not be pushed around by bullies who think they have a mandate to sow and reap fear. Resolve to refute petty demagogues who will try to shout you down. Resolve to resist or shake off complacency. This is no time for it. Resolve to organize against the anti-democratic purge of not only the external forms of democracy, but also the explicit deterioration of its substance. Resolve to resist the resurgence of the nuclear arms race. We are past that insanity. Resolve to resist government and corporate oppression at work. Revive unions. Resolve to resist government control of information and suppression of a free press or any other form of speech, thought, or media. Never forget that the First Amendment is the real guardian of all the other rights and liberties guaranteed by constitutional government. Resolve to resist privatization of education. Public education preserves democracy. Resolve to resist denial of women's rights and equality. Male superiority is a sick joke. Resolve to fight for women's reproductive rights and resist attempts to abolish Roe versus Wade. Half the human race subjugating the reproductive half is ridiculously counterproductive. Resolve to resist racial, sexual, and ethnic slurs and attacks against anybody. Resolve to not remain silent when someone spouts racist, sexual, or ethnic remarks. Resolve to resist attempts to abolish environmental standards and fight to increase them for the health and preservation of our descendants and the world they will inhabit. Resolve to resist climate change denial and those who speciously espouse that denial. Resolve to ardently support affordable and competent health care for everybody. Resolve to support gun control and restraints upon those who may possess firearms, especially open carry laws and posse comitatus style militia armament. Resolve to demand restraints upon upper class wealth accumulation. Resolve to insist on limits of corporate influence over laws and politics. Resolve to uphold fair laws and resist unjust and prejudicial laws. resolve, in addition, to demand investigation of foreign connivance in presidential elections, and in addition, in the name of fairness, discourage covert American interference in elections around the world. Resolve to help reform the Democratic Party to its essential roots by participating in local party affairs, as well as standing up to the Republican Party's pernicious and unworthy obsession for power. Resolve that Oregon, as a blue state on the upper left edge of the lower 48, acts as a bastion of democratic liberties despite the presence of ravaging right-wing militias. Resolve to support public media through active and financial participation, and also be persistently insistent that commercial media meet its responsibilities on the public airwaves. Resolve to passionately keep the promise of Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg that we are a sovereignty of the people, by the people, and for the people. Resolve that this is not a time to quail or cavil. Futures of descendants and possibly planet are at stake. Franklin Roosevelt said at his first inauguration in 1933 that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Do not be afraid of being afraid. We are living in an increasingly fearful and dangerous time. Resolve to utilize your very warranted fear as soldiers do in a war, to desperately fight for life and liberty as our revolutionary ancestors fought to create freedom down to the last generation. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk is this program's engineer. Yesterday, 131 years ago, on December 29, 1890, George Armstrong Custer's descendant 7th Cavalry massacred Sioux Indian Chief Bigfoot and the remnants of his tribe at Wounded Knee, South Dakota. More than 200 men, most elderly, women, and children were shot down with the old chief in that infamous slaughter 14 years after Custer and his troop died fighting some of them at Little Bighorn in the summer of 1876. The pointless murder of the Sioux, or Lakota, as they know themselves, at Wounded Knee shocked much of the white America even then. It was the last major bloodletting of more than three centuries of chauvinistic genocide and signaled the final defeat of the people who were here first. Start the new year right. Stay alive and help protect everyone else. Vaccinate and isolate. Let KMUN be your radio cabaret when midnight chimes, and now is instantly then and forever vanished into history and myth. Happy New Year.